Prime Minister Vladimir Putin hopes to return to the president's office in Russia, but he never really gave up any of the power that went with the office. Putin rules Russia with an authoritarian hand, and he's never been shy about raising it against his enemies or those he thinks are his enemies. Bill Browder knows that perhaps better than anyone. Browder was once one of the most prominent foreign investors in Russia and one of the most energetic cheerleaders for the country, a corporate provocateur. He set up the company Hermitage Capital, which is a capital management fund, and his company made billions until the Kremlin expelled him in 2005, raided his company offices, and tried to nationalize the business. Bill Browder joins us now from the studios of our partner, the BBC World Service in London. Hi, Bill.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for joining us. You know, I wonder, in your transformation from being sort of a real supporter of Putin and approving of the strong hand at the helm to criticizing the corruption in the Russian government, perhaps your journey from cheerleader to critic is one that the Russian people are going through.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've been living in Russia since 1996, running this investment fund. And if anyone who had been in Russia in the 1990s would have seen that when they privatized the country, 22 individuals ended up with about 50% of the country. And 141 million Russians really lived in abject poverty. And so you had this situation where professors had to become taxi drivers and nurses had to become prostitutes to support themselves. And 22 people were stealing all the money and buying these yachts and spending hundreds of millions of dollars on villas in the south of France. And so at the end of the 1990s, when Putin first came to power, he said, we're going to crack down on the oligarchs. And you couldn't have not been cheering for him to do that when he first came there, because it was just such a heartbreaking set of events that happened. However, he didn't do what he said he was going to do. He basically instead cracked down on one oligarch, which was this fellow named Mikhail Khodorkovsky, who was the richest guy in Russia. And by doing that, he sent this very powerful message to all the other oligarchs that basically they had to become sort of part of his camp and take direction from him and do whatever he asked them to do. And from that moment on, he became the biggest oligarch in Russia and has been behaving that way ever since. And so you now still have a situation, and this is now 10 years, 11 years later, where the Russians, they don't have the schools don't. You have to give bribes to teachers to teach their classes. There's no hospitals. The roads cost 20 times as much to build because there's so much corruption in road building, and the whole country is falling apart. And people are saying, you know, that's just not the deal. That's not a fair deal.
You know, if that's the case, and if Putin is basically the chief in charge of that, and I mean, obviously, it sounds like you're saying the reason he opposed the oligarchs is because he wanted all the power for himself. But if that's the case, then why is there still so much support for him in Russia?
Well, I think that this last couple weeks has proved that this, quote, support that he has is a fiction. You know, it's very easy to get some polling agency to say Putin's got 70% support and then have everyone just repeat it over and over again until it becomes sort of a fact that everyone thinks is the case. But that's just not how things are. There was some moments in time when he did have genuine support. Basically, from the year 2000 up till 2008, the Russians became wealthier because of oil prices going up. And during that period of time, he distributed enough of the money so people got a little bit better off. So people went from, you know, $1,000 a month or $1,000 a year of income to $5,000 a year of income. And they could take their first foreign holiday and so on and so forth. But in 2008, things then went down and they haven't gone back up. And so people are no longer economically better off. And at the same time, they're looking at this whole situation and saying, you know, what is this guy doing for us? And it all came to a head about a month ago. And I should point out that Russia is a big country of symbolism, and it's very, very hard to govern. And so Putin governs by symbols. You know, for example, he arrests the richest guy and the other rich guys then behave themselves. And it's a country of symbolism in the opposite direction. And about a month ago, Putin showed up for one of his very the normal stage managed events, where he was at a wrestling match where he was going to go congratulate the Russian wrestler who had beat the American wrestler. And as he went up on stage, as he was expecting to have cheers from the audience, which is normally stage managed, the audience abruptly, without any cues, started to boo him. And this was the big moment. And anybody who has been following Russia all looked at this in awe, because this was the first time that sort of spontaneously people started to express their dissatisfaction with Putin. And these weren't the liberals. These weren't the human rights activists. These were wrestling fans that were booing Putin. And from that moment on, things started to really deteriorate leading up to these protests that happened last weekend.
Then how are we to evaluate what's going to happen as we lead up to the presidential elections? We spoke with a reporter out of Moscow this morning who said that Prokhorov, the owner of the New York basketball team, even though he's entered the race for president, that in fact there's a suspicion among the Russians that Putin actually put him up to run for president in order to make his win seem more credible when it occurs. Do you believe that?
Could easily be. But let me just frame this whole story for everybody to think about. This for Putin to lose power in Russia, it means that a number of Putin and a number of highly placed individuals in the Russian government are going to lose access to personally stealing billions, tens of billions of dollars from the government, which is what they've been doing over the last 10 years. So there's huge money involved in this whole thing. The second thing is that that Putin is not a guy who takes any type of dissent lightly. He's highly vindictive. And when he goes after people, he goes after them in the most horrible way. And so to expect that after this demonstration of 50,000 people saying Putin is a thief, down with Putin, that he would just walk away and sort of let democracy happen, that's an impossibility in the context of Russia. And so what is Putin going to do? Hard to say exactly, and I don't think he knows exactly what he's going to do, but he's not going to go out and get the machine guns out like they do in Iran or Syria, because he's more sophisticated than that. And so could easily be, and I don't have a firm judgment on this Prokhorov presidential nomination, because I don't think anyone really knows. But I mean, just think about it objectively. Prokhorov is worth $18 billion. He's the second richest guy in Russia. And all of a sudden, he's going to go challenge the president when the last guy who did that is sitting in a jail in Siberia for the last 8 years. It sounds a little unlikely.
And you yourself kind of have a horse in this race. Is part of this criticism of Putin personal, because your business, that you were banned from Russia, that the Russian authorities raided your offices and tried to actually take the profits of your company?
It's deeply personal, but has nothing to do with money. Well, let me just finish off the story of what happened, because it's the most heartbreaking story you'll ever hear. After my offices were raided, we hired a young lawyer, a 36-year-old lawyer named Sergei Magnitsky from an American law firm, to help us figure out why our offices were raided and so on and so forth. He discovered that the reason for the raids was the police took our documents and used those documents to then fraudulently re-register our companies. And then through a very complicated and scheme too long to describe in this interview, they stole $230 million of taxes that we paid, not from us, but from the Russian government. So a group of police and criminals stole nearly $250 million of money from the Russian government. Sergei then testified about the involvement of the police officers in this massive fraud. And the same police officers then came to his home at 8 in the morning on November 24th, 2008, arrested him, put him in pretrial detention, and started to torture him to get him to withdraw his testimony against the officers. They did a whole bunch of terrible things, and at the end of the day, he died on November 16th, 2009, at the age of 37.
And you lay that at Putin's door.
He's ultimately responsible.
Bill Browder, founder and CEO of Hermitage Capital, speaking to us from London. Thank you so much, Bill.
Thank you.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.